Welcome, everyone. Tonight we are talking about rewriting the script, and this is our Miracle Mondays series. Rewriting the script is about being in relationship with other people, and we certainly have a lot of opportunity to do that, don't we? And many times that can present what seems to be the biggest challenges in our lives. You know, some of those relationships might be really lovely and wonderful, and we look forward to them and, you know, perhaps seek out those people when we're having a tough day. And then other relationships that we have can feel very heavy and burdensome. And maybe we want to get away from those, or we try to find a way to not be with those people. Or, you know, so these are some of the thoughts that might be coming up in the relationships that we have. So this idea of rewriting the script is literally a metaphor for the idea that we are really on a stage of life. And every one of us is a script holder. In A Course in Miracles, it tells us that what we create with our thoughts, we will see as if it is real. You know, a lot of times we think things are happening to us, but in truth, according to The Course in Miracles, things are actually happening from us. So whatever we see with our eyes on our own stage of life literally is coming from us and not to us. So sometimes you might think, well, you know, I saw a car accident happen in front of me. So how did I create that? I mean, these are two other people. How did I have anything to do with that? But the idea that you are in that space at that time to witness that car accident, there's something very important about that in terms of what we were holding in our own mind and our own consciousness, whether knowingly or unknowingly. So what we want to begin to do is start to look inward. That's where all the answers are. You know, most of the time we spend our time looking outward. We look at other people and we see them as the problem, perhaps. Or we see our job as the problem or our boss as the problem. You know, we spend a lot of our time and energy focusing outward and trying to change the conditions that are around us, right? So that's a pretty normal mode of behavior. And sometimes we feel successful and sometimes we don't. And there's an inconsistency. So what the course is about is helping us to understand how we can go about this with much greater consistency and ultimately complete consistency. And the way that we do that is we begin to look inward and see what it is that's going on within us. What kinds of thoughts are we holding? Now, the first temptation is to start to blame yourself. Well, if I have this world in front of me, or I have these relationships that seem so unhealed, and if I'm the creator of those, then that must mean that I'm somehow deficient, or that I don't have very good thoughts, perhaps. But this isn't about blame. It's not about blame at all. It's not even about judgment. It's about awareness. If we have an awareness of a natural law, something like, you know, gravity, it doesn't mean that gravity is personal. You know, if you walk off a balcony three stories up, you're coming down, right? That's the natural law of gravity. It's not like the earth has decided against you, right? So we could be aware of a natural law without it being punitive. As we go about looking inward at our thoughts, we could just do that with some awareness. There doesn't need to be anybody that's wrong. Perhaps we hadn't really looked there before. Some have and some haven't. So what we're doing tonight is looking at our stage of life and looking around to see the people. I kind of think of it as, you know, my people or our people. You, in your particular realm of life, you have a circle of people around you. Some are very close, almost like on the inside circle. Some are in that middle circle, kind of those that maybe don't spend as much time with, but definitely still have a lot of influence over you in your life. I think of this circle of people as those that have time and frequency with us, and also those that have influence. You might have had a grandmother when you were six, and she's not even here on earth, but she's still influencing you in everything that you do. Maybe she was the one that just always told you that you could be whoever you want, whenever you want to. And you just remember her words into your ears. Even today, you might be remembering her words as your motivation to move forward. So whether these people are in spirit or in a physical body, they are still your people. And they are the ones that are still influencing you today. And then there's the people that we don't really know, but the people that we're aware of. Maybe the people we see on the news or the people we see as we drive down the road. These are our people, right? And then there's all the people that we don't see. But it's almost like we have this world that reaches out so far, and then it almost stops, and we don't really have as much awareness beyond a certain point. As you look about and see your people, it's kind of interesting to take a little bit of an inventory. Not in a way to judge, just for awareness. So if you were to look out in that grouping of people around you, would you find these people to be those that are a holder of unconditional love for you? Like if you think about your people, how many people hold unconditional love for you? It might not be anyone. Unconditional love is a very high vibrational thing to do. It's someone that has great love and really no fear, and so there may not be one that you could even think of other than maybe as being a master that walks the earth. And you might say, Jesus is with my people because he influences my thoughts, my decision making, or another master teacher. As we people our universe, you want to look out and say, who represents unconditional love to me? Secondly, you know, who are my allies? You know, as you look around, there's allies, right? People you know that, you know, maybe they get mopey, maybe they get grumpy, maybe sometimes they say something that's kind of upsets you a little bit, but you know that when, you know, the rubber meets the road, that person is in your court, and they will make sure that, you know, nobody's talking bad about you when you're turned around, right? That they are your ally. They are somebody that's supportive and loving, and they may not have it all figured out, but they're in your court. And then we have people that you might think of as neutral. They're not really necessarily in your court or out of your court. They're just kind of there. And then we have people that you might look out and see as victims. Not that they're complaining all the time. You know, that word, nobody really likes that word. But that word, what it represents is that something has happened to them, right? If something has happened to you, then you are the victim of those circumstances. If you are in an accident, then you are the victim of the car accident. You know, the world uses that word sometimes very harshly, but just in a general sense, victim just represents someone that something is happening to them and not from them. So if you look around your circle of influence, who tends to believe that the world is causing them great pain and distress? It's not a judgment upon the person. It's that as they look upon their world, do they see the world as very almost vindictive or punitive? Or do they see the world as kind of their painter's palette and they're able to create as they wish? A victim would be one feeling that you're kind of at the mercy of the world around you. There might be those that play the role of persecutor, those that just tend to stand in judgment of you. Maybe it's sometimes, maybe it's all the time. Who is it out there that's playing that role of judge and persecutor when it comes especially to our own daily experience? And then we have those, we can keep kind of ramping up the roles, but we might have the villain. You know, the villain almost sounds like a melodramatic figure, but the villain could be someone that just keeps wreaking havoc on your life. Maybe it's a relative, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's someone that you don't know, maybe you have a stalker, you know, somebody that's actually stalking you and you can't make them stop and you have to get a restraining order to make them quit, right? So we have our villains. And then you might look out and see someone that is almost like a prisoner. Or maybe you feel like you're a prisoner in your own world. It's almost like you're trapped somehow and you can't get out of this box that you're in. In all of these labels and titles, as we're looking out upon the people around us, we can also apply those same titles to ourselves. You know, do I feel like I represent unconditional love? Am I an ally to the people around me? Am I neutral? Do I just show up and sort of be in relationship with someone without judgment and maybe without some big capacity to be an influence in their lives? Am I a victim? Am I playing that role myself? Am I a persecutor? Do I use my time and energy and attention at kind of finding the flaw in other people? And do I share that with other people? And then we might see ourselves as the villain, the one that maybe did something really, really wrong, maybe intentionally and maybe not intentionally. Maybe you accidentally ran into a car and totaled that car, or maybe you took out a person, and you might see yourself as a villain. And then you might also see yourself as that prisoner of your own universe. Sometimes we can feel that way. It's almost like everything's happening to us, and as hard as we try, we can't seem to get it to change. And we try everything we know. It's like we have this deck of cards, and we've played every card we know. And we finally run out of cards, and then, you know, what do we do then? It's almost like we surrender. We give up at that point. Sometimes we go through a period of hopelessness. So you see, as we look out into our world and our sphere of influence, and also as we look within our own being and see what we find as judgments against ourselves, we find that there's all these roles, and there's many more. These are just some of the more significant ones. One thing that we can begin to see is that each person in our group is actually holding a script. You know, as a metaphor, every person on your stage is holding a script. So if I am a victim, let's say I feel like the world is happening to me, there's nothing I can do about it, or maybe I have this terrible illness and no matter what I do, I can't get rid of it. Well, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means that you feel victimized by your illness. So if I'm playing the role of victim, I might have assigned the role of persecutor to a person or a circumstance or a situation. In my particular scene, I might be holding the script that says I'm the victim to my illness. And then I might have a doctor who's an influence in my life, and maybe he's my rescuer. He's trying to rescue me from my illness. And then I might have my persecutor, maybe it's a family member or someone saying, you know, you wouldn't be sick if you had taken care of yourself. So I have somebody there to be sure to mirror all my guilt to me. Or maybe it's me. Maybe I'm victim and persecutor. I'm not only feeling victimized by my world, but I'm also playing the role of judging myself very harshly. And maybe I never even say that out loud, but maybe that's what I'm doing all day long. So do you see some of the different roles that we play with each other? As we get rolling here tonight, I just wanted to turn to page 231, to paragraph 9. And it says this: the power of decision is your one remaining freedom as a prisoner of this world. You can decide to see it right. What you made of it is not its reality, for its reality is only what you give it. You cannot really give anything but love to anyone or anything, nor can you really receive anything but love from them. If you think you have received anything else, it is because you have looked within and thought you saw the power to give something else within yourself. It was only this decision that determined what you found, for it was the decision for what you sought. Some people might have heard that and thought, okay, I get that, and some might have heard it and said, I don't know what that just said, and that's just fine. The idea here is that as the children of God, I think of it as a straight line relationship. That God is the source and giver. We are the receivers, and we are the extension. We're like the ray of the sun to the sun. The ray of the sun can never be anything other than the ray of the sun to the sun. It can't decide against itself. It cannot be darkness. It will always be light. It can never be other than what it is. So to me, it's like a straight line relationship. There is no deviation. Now, we are actually the same thing. You know, God being the source and the giver and the creator of all in all, pure consciousness of love. We are the children of that. We are the individualized expression of all that is. It's a straight line relationship. God is the cause. We are the effect of the cause. We're the same stuff, just like the light of the sun rays are the same stuff as the light of the sun. In fact, the sun itself is actually not like a solid planet. It's just a huge mass of gases and very hot, heated energy, right? And the rays of the light are part of that same light energy. So in very much the same way, we are the loving consciousness. We are the same stuff as the God that created us, right? And we can't not be that. Now, we are a little bit different than a ray of the sun because we have the power of decision. And even in our own reading that we just did, that very first line, it said, the power of decision is your one remaining freedom as a prisoner of this world. So unlike the ray of the sun, we have the power to make a decision. Now, what happens is we have this tremendous power as the children of God. And if we truly understood that power, then we could do things that we wouldn't even imagine we could do. And we're all beginning to wake up to that. We're not there yet, but we will be. And that power is becoming much more known to us, right? Because up until now, most of us have seen ourselves as inadequate, weak, you know, deficient in some way, that we're not smart enough, we're not being enough, we don't do enough. If we could look at the idea that we, as the children of God, we are all powerful beings. We also have the power of decision. So we have this little gift in a way that maybe you might think of as a curse, but we have a little gift. And that gift is that when we make a decision, when we have a thought, we will see it as if it is real. Because we create just like God. We have the power of creation within us. So even if we have a scary thought, you will be looking at the manifestation of that thought. If I grow up with the idea that I'm not safe, and then I walk through town one night, and if somebody's going to get mugged, it will be me. Because I have a belief system that says I'm not safe. So literally, it's not a punitive thing, it's not judgmental, it's not even selective. It is cause and effect. If I hold a consciousness that says I am not safe, I will create the experience of not being safe. Do you see the relationship? Now, if I get mugged, a lot of people, or if they find themselves victimized by a crime, they think it actually happened to them. They don't realize it actually happened from them. And that is a lot to hear. Because if you have been victimized and you've gone through, say, some kind of a brutal crime, the last thing you want to hear is that, you know, somehow you created this, right? This isn't about blame. It's not about fault. And it no way condones that whatever happened and whatever your experience was is somehow justified or acceptable. It isn't. No one should be victimized. No one should be hurt. No one should ever experience pain ever again, or suffering, or sacrifice. That's the world that I am longing to see with my eyes. But first, I have to see it within me. I have to look within me, and I have to ask God, is there any place in my mind where I have decided against a world that is pure love, that is safe, that is peaceful? Because if I have those thoughts within my mind, and I must, because I wouldn't be able to look outward and see conflict, pain, misery, and despair. The only way I would even see it, the only way that it would be on my radar screen, is it has to be in my consciousness first. Cause is in the consciousness, the effect is what you see with your eyes. So it looks like on this stage we have all these people playing these roles with us that we absolutely have no control over, and yet we have total control once it's understood, because we have actually assigned each and every role. If I need someone to persecute me because I'm feeling guilty, I will have a line out the door of people that love to persecute, right? Don't you have people in your life that you're aware of somewhere along the line, and they persecute for a living? They find the flaw. They find out what's wrong with somebody, what they're doing wrong, who they're doing it wrong to, why are they doing that, how come they're doing that, and they have something to say about every other person. Those persecutors that choose that role will very quickly divinely find, the person that needs to be persecuted. And that comes from within. So if we're holding guilt, we are going to attract a persecutor. And that persecutor will do their job flawlessly. And they will make sure that we are told, how come you did it that way? Why are you doing it like this? What did you do that for, right? That sounds like it's outside of us. It sounds like someone else's consciousness. That is the mouthpiece on our thought system. So that's why we want to go through this healing of our own minds, because the beautiful benefit is that when these thoughts get healed within us, our persecutors stop showing up. And that's literally what's happened in my life. And I've watched it happen, because I used to carry tremendous guilt. Guilt about everything. You know, if I didn't call somebody at the right time, if I didn't, you know, do something the right way. You know, it's like you could almost, if somebody said, you know, what have you ever done wrong in your life? And I almost had a list in my back pocket. I could just produce it and say, oh, here's all, you know, it's almost like they're embedded in my forehead. Everything I'd ever done wrong, here it is, you know? So I held guilt almost like a badge of honor. You know, it's almost like we've learned that guilt is a good thing. That if you feel guilty, that somehow you will take right action. If you feel guilty, somehow it will keep you from doing the wrong thing. If you feel guilty, somehow you will act of a higher consciousness. You know what guilt does is it causes you to do the wrong thing. Because when you're in guilt, you're constantly focusing on what you don't want. Right? If you're feeling guilty about something or hurting someone's feelings, or, you know, that's what you're thinking about all the time, guess what you're going to do? You're going to end up hurting somebody else's feelings. Because you're so busy thinking about what you don't want to do, you're going to not listen to them, you're going to talk over the top of them, or you're going to say something that they don't like, and then they're going to get to persecute you about that. So this idea of guilt is a really interesting thing. It's like the big heavy blanket that's over our consciousness. So as we look out into our sphere of influence, they are showing up in the way that we decided they should. And that's really hard to imagine sometimes, especially with people in our inner circle, people that are the most challenging. You know, in another class, we talked about the bowling balls from heaven, and those bowling balls are our beliefs, and that other people have to reach into our bag and pull out the belief and show it to us. It's the same idea. Only sometimes different metaphors work better for different people. So I like this idea of the stage, that each one of us is holding a script. Let's say that I'm in a company and that company is just getting ready for a layoff. And maybe I'm going into fear and worry and distress. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm next. I thought I was okay, and I'm talking to my friends. Now I'm using my thoughts, my words, my actions, my behaviors, my feelings. I'm now literally fueling getting laid off. I might as well put "I pray" on the end of my fear. Will I be the one to get laid off? I pray? Mm-hmm. You might as well add those two words, because that's what's happening. And this is not about judgment. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's about looking in your own mind and seeing, are you contributing to love or are you contributing to fear? Are you contributing to peace or are you contributing to your own distress and sadness? Wherever you put your attention, wherever you spend your time, if you are spending your time in fear and worry and distress, and it's tempting, isn't it? In today's times when things are happening so quickly and one day it's this and the next day it's that, our greatest temptation is to just leap right into the fear. But we're learning through these techniques and through these concepts of ways so that we don't go into that fear. Because the moment you go into that fear, you are literally producing what you fear. What you fear, you will attract. What you look at disappears. And when I say what you look at is to look within. Now, it doesn't mean we're really good at this. And thank God that's not necessary. We don't have to be good at it. Our part is to be willing to understand one thing. The Course in Miracles says we must understand one thing. We are the dreamer of our dream. If we don't get that, we will be a victim the rest of our life. You see how that could be? That when you're having an experience, that if you think it's happening to you, all of your power has been given away. You just resigned it to everyone and everything, and you said, basically, I just have to do best I can do with what's going on in front of me, and now you are powerless. And that is, there's like a choice there. We are either of all power and decision and consciousness, and we are the creator of our universe, or we are weak and powerless and scared, and we just have to juggle those balls as best as we can when we don't even know how to juggle, right? And you have to pick which side you're going to be on. And the beautiful part is whatever side you choose to be on, ideally, of course, you want to know your power, but you don't have to be good at this. You just need to be willing to be shown what's true about this. Willingness is everything. And that's why, you know, even in my prayer book, the Miracles in Prayer Handbook, every prayer in that book is about addressing the thought behind the problem. Dear God, if I have any thought in my mind that is contributing to what I see, please take that thought from me and heal it for me. If there is any place in my mind where I am deciding on lack or guilt or fear or distress, if I am worrying needlessly, will you please help me by trading your thoughts with my own? I only want what you have given, and I let the rest go. Now that seems simple enough, except for we are really trained to see it the other way. We are trained to see cause and effect reversed, that the world and the people in our world are the cause of our problem and our distress and our pain, right? Aren't we trained to see it that way? That, you know, if I go to work today and get laid off, well, what can I do? So now my children won't eat because I got laid off today. So we just have to deal with it best we know how. So when we're in those situations of fear and distress, we can always go back, and even the class title, Undoing the Fear, it goes into the 5 steps of how to get out of that fearful place. So I won't reiterate it all here because there's so much to talk about over time, but the 5 steps, right, to get out of fear. So what we can do is when we look out at our people, let's look at the role they're playing. Let's look at what we have assigned to them. So if you have someone in your life that is the persecutor, or someone that's the antagonist, someone that is the irritant, that just won't stop being that way, if we could just be willing to see them differently, that's a lot, isn't it? You know, when you're really convinced about someone, and maybe you've lived with them your whole life, and you're thinking they can't be any other way, they don't have it within them to be any other way, right? Maybe you have a brother that's a alcoholic, and that's all he's ever done, and all he does is hurt people's feelings, and all he does is cause distress and chaos and problems for everybody, and everybody just deals with it as best as they can. So when this is happening, it's not easy, right, to be willing to see him differently, because your mind is like, are you crazy? See him differently? If you take your guard down, he's going to get you. It'll be worse, right? Your lower mind is trying to tell you constantly, don't you dare try to see this differently, because you'll be unprotected, your guard will be down, and he will come and get you, and he will make it worse than before. Isn't that what some of those thoughts are like? So our willingness to see something differently is a very courageous step, and it starts the tumblers going. Whoever you hold in your mind tonight, that is your persecutor, or the one that causes you distress, the person that is your negative catalyst, or the group of people, perhaps, those are the people that A Course in Miracles would say are your salvation. The reason they are your salvation is they are reflecting to you the deepest unhealed part of your mind. And if we will not just try to attack and defend ourselves from them and just try to get away from them or deal with them, however we know how to do, and if we will pause for a moment and go to that highest place of consciousness and say, how do I see this person differently? I'm willing to. You know what? Right now, God, if you just showed me another being, like maybe I'm looking at Jesus with amnesia. That's what I try to think of. My hardest people I think of, you know, maybe I could just pretend this is Jesus with amnesia. He just, you know, thinks he's this challenging, bitter, irritating person, right? So how would you talk to Jesus with amnesia? What if he was acting out in this way? What if he was just being crazy and ridiculous and unreasonable, and yet you know he's the light of God? You know he has the power to heal. You know he has the power to raise people from the dead, but he forgot. Would you still just buy the story? As he comes at you and you know, maybe he judges you and he's talking about how little he feels and how he never amounts to anything, you would probably, if you knew who he was, be reminding him of who he is, wouldn't you? Or at very least, forgive him for his amnesia. But in our situation, we've literally forgotten who we are. We've forgotten who the other is. And it's the same thing. As the children of God, we have within us the capacity for greatness beyond measure. We have the capacity to love beyond anything that we have even experienced thus far. We have the ability to think with the greatest of wisdom and intelligence. And we're not particularly aware of those traits that we have. And because we're not aware, we start feeling very powerless and frail and grumpy and irritated. And then we start projecting it out onto other people because we get so filled up with these terrible feelings that we have because we don't remember all that about ourselves. And then the first thing we do is project it out, usually on someone you love. Why do you do it to someone you love? Because you know they'll stick around. You know they're not going anywhere, right? If you take it out on just anybody, well, they'll probably have nothing else to do with you ever again. So you might as well take it out on a sister or a mother or a child or someone that you know loves you, because you can express all your discomfort about life and somehow they're still there the next day, usually, until they've had enough, right? But we kind of gamble that maybe they'll stick around. So I can be grumpy and not watch my words. But what ends up happening is if we can look out on our stage, our sphere of influence, and imagine this, that every one of those players is the light of God. Every single one. And to the degree that we are not willing to look into the light, to the divinity within that being, no matter what their role is, we are blocking the love of God from our own experience, because that's what they represent. And we cannot remember the access to that love, because this would be called a barrier to love. Every one of those people, especially the ones that bring up all the turmoil and the judgment that you have, those are the ones that are offering gold to us. And so we can stop right there in that relationship and just be willing to see them differently. And it's okay to be honest. It's not like we're trying to throw pink paint over something. You could have a prayer that says, "Dear God, I'm in this relationship and this person is driving me crazy. I can't even understand why they're acting this way. And I want to run and hide. I don't even want to be in this relationship. But you know what? I am learning that there's more than what I see. And I want to see what you created. I don't want to see what I created. If I assigned them this role, I don't need to see that anymore. I want to see the divinity of this person. I want to see the light that you put there. And I am willing to see past my judgments." The Course in Miracles says that we don't have to have thoughts that are pure. Like, not all our thoughts have to be purified. Our part is just to not have impure thoughts that we would keep. We all have them every day. You know, no matter how much you walk in light, whether it's a fearful thought or a judgmental thought, or why is it this way, or you walk out the door and all of a sudden it's cold, you thought it was warm, and it's like, oh, I thought it was going to be, you know, we have thoughts, and they go in and they go out. They don't have to mean anything. But we take our thoughts and we can amp those thoughts up, and then we project them onto other people, and we don't realize that our choice to do that is blocking love from ourselves.
That brings up an interesting point about amnesia, because what if your enemy is in front of you and he has amnesia? Do you remind him who he is?
So I guess it's back to that term of what is your enemy. I guess an enemy would be one that is somehow hurting or violating you. When you are in a situation of fear, and, you know, A Course in Miracles is not about sitting in a closet or pretending something is what it's not or isn't what it is, right? It's not about that. It's about drawing upon the truth of who we are. And in that truth is our protection. In that truth is our safety. You know, it's challenging sometimes to understand the idea of an illusion, because we look out in our world and it sure doesn't look like an illusion. Because we see the same people every day. We have similar experiences every day. We have patterns and routines and rituals. And so it's really hard to imagine, how could this be an illusion? But then when we go to sleep at night, when we are in that dream, we have no idea we're in a dream. We believe that it is real and it is true and that we are experiencing it exactly as it is. And then we wake up. And then we look back on it and we go, oh, thank goodness, usually, that was a dream, right? Now, we don't know that until we woke up, right? So even in this lifetime here, the Course in Miracles would tell us that what we're experiencing right now in our daytime dream is the same thing. That's really tough to get to. But you will actually see it as you practice these concepts, because what tends to happen is you start to have glimpses of waking up. You know, for my own self, where I fell into that pothole, because I think I might have shared it in another class, but I'm rollerblading, having a great day, and we come down to the end of the day, and we're going back towards the car, and I'm looking up at my husband, Terry, talking to him. We're just, you know, just finishing our conversation, and I don't realize there's this, like, you know, foot and a half deep pothole right behind the trunk of the car, just a big chunk out of the parking lot. And I just went straight down into that pothole. And I, you know, I heard my leg crack in two places. I have broken an arm before, so I know the feeling. Anyone that's ever broken a bone, you know there's like this explosion that goes off in your head, right? And you just know what happened. And I had been practicing these concepts, and I just thought, no. I'm beginning to learn I'm the dreamer of this dream, and I have no interest in a broken leg and a cast and all the thing that goes along with having a broken leg. The pain, the suffering, the medication, the doctors, the, you know, the, everything that goes along. Maybe I can't walk. Maybe I can't go to work. So I have no interest in this. And so I just began to pray. In the prayer handbook, there's a prayer called the Prayer for Emergencies. Or the Prayer of Truth. It's in towards the back of the book. And it just says, there is only God. There is only the power of God. There is only the presence of God. There is no opposing power. Sin, disease, and death are not real, and there is nothing to fear. And I said it again, there is only God. There is only the power of God. There is only the presence of God. There is no opposing power. Sin, disease, and death, and broken legs are not real, and there is nothing to fear. Now, it sounds like I'm putting pink paint over my situation, but what I'm doing is I'm making a decision. Do I want my illusion to be real, or do I want to draw upon the truth of who I am? You see, it's not a blend. In every moment, we're making a choice. And so Terry came up and he looked at me, he said, are you okay? I said, give me a minute, because I just need to keep doing this. And I just kept saying it out loud, and it wasn't saying it out loud so God could hear me. I was saying it out loud so I could hear me, because my fearful mind kept saying, broken leg, broken leg, broken leg, broken leg. I agreed with myself I was going to sit in that pothole until the pain stopped. Because if I got up with pain, I would probably convince myself that I had damage. So I decided I'm not getting up till the pain is gone. My commitment is to the truth of who I am. And so it took me about 15 minutes because there was pain. There was a challenge. My mind kept challenging me. You have a broken leg. Didn't you hear it? You heard it snap. Don't you feel it? It's sitting right under your body. Don't you feel it? You know, so I'm saying all this out loud while the other part of my mind is just ferocious. But eventually the pain eased and it went away. And I stood up with no mark, no breaks, no pain. And I've had so many of these experiences, and it may sound really outrageous, but you should just try living around here for a while. It's just amazing. And it's not, I'm not special. It's that I practice what this book talks about. And when you start to see those things happen, and those are miracles, I mean, that's a bona fide miracle. I know my leg was broken, but then it wasn't. And it wasn't because of pixie dust. It wasn't because I have some special power. It's because I chose the truth instead of my condition of pain. So in every moment, we have a choice to make. And that choice will determine the outcome of our experience. So when we're in relationship, it's the same thing. If we're judging someone as being our perpetrator, our persecutor, our villain, right? If they're the ones that are causing us such pain and suffering, and we're just so tired of it, if we will choose to see the truth of them, it means by definition that we are withdrawing from the illusion. Remember, you can't have a blend. And the Course is very clear about that. It's an either or proposition. I think sometimes we think we can kind of dance in the illusion and we can have our illusions. And then we can kind of just, you know, call upon God to kind of rescue us and that, you know, everything will be okay. But you know what? That produces inconsistent results because we're not calling on consistency. And so sometimes that'll work out. And sometimes we have the experience of it not working out. But when we draw upon the truth, each and every time you're going to get a 100% result of what truth offers. going back to relationship, let's say someone in your life is being that challenge. It's as simple as this. I'm willing to see this person differently. Now, what's going to start happening? Because you're challenging the illusion. You are challenging a heavy investment that you have made in how this person should show up for you. So let's say your whole life, your brother's been this alcoholic that's mean to everybody, right? So now you're challenging that, and you're not saying he's sober, he's perfect, he's wonderful. It's not about that. It's just this. I'm willing to see him differently. God, let me see what you see. Let me see through the eyes of love. Let me remember that he has the capacity to be whole and complete, that that is within him. And if I would be willing to see it, it can be shown to me. And so what ends up happening is the other person has a decision to make. Because what just happened if I do that? So now it's me on the stage, maybe with, if I had a brother that's got this behavior. Now my role was the sister of the alcoholic, kind of like the victim, the abused one, right? But when I made that decision to see him differently, I just took my script and I put it down, didn't I? I'm no longer the victim of this perpetrator, right? Because now that I'm willing to see him differently, I want to see a new role. I have no interest in seeing this. I want to know the truth of him. The moment I put that script down, the dynamics of the stage have to shift. So what will happen is the other person has a choice to make. If they are determined to play the role that they love to play, they will just go play it with someone else. Now, he'll still be your brother, but all of a sudden, he just won't be around as much. He'll be hanging out with his alcoholic friends, or he'll be down at the bar and, you know, being with people that want to do it with him or whatever. All of a sudden, he'll just kind of appear to not be around as much, because if you're asking to see the truth of him and he doesn't want to show up that way and he's very committed to his role, you're going to see that relationship begin to shift. But what will happen is you will find your experience becoming much more peaceful and consistent. Okay? Now, generally speaking, when you put your script down, most of the time they will rise to it. You know, if you feel really powerless, if you feel like you're not worthy, maybe you're going in for a job interview and you just go, oh my God, you know, I can't believe I have to go today. You know, I don't even think I'm good enough for this job. Maybe you're just thinking this, but I need a job so bad, so I just got to go in. I just got to do this. And maybe your good friend is sitting right next to you and you're telling your good friend, you know, I don't even know that I'm the person for this. You know, they want us to be able to do this and that and the other thing. And your good friend turns to you and says, you know what? You're great at this. You may not be aware of it, but this is really your gift. This is your talent, right? And they give you this pep talk. And somehow they convince you that maybe you can get this job. And you know how it just kind of lifts you right up out of your feelings of powerlessness and misery? It just lifts you right up into the light. We don't need words to do that. That's a thought form. So when you're doing this with somebody else and you've put your script down, that's what you're doing. It's kind of like that mental pep talk almost. And don't we, as peaceful, loving souls, because that's who we are, we kind of like that talk. We like to feel more powerful. If you had a choice right now, would you choose to feel less powerful or more powerful? More powerful, right? Would you choose to be more loving or less loving? Right? Now you could be feeling really unloving right now. You could be on the darkest part of your unloving meter, right? And any given day, somebody says you want to be more loving or less loving, you'd go, more loving, more powerful, more joyful, more happy. So when you lay your script down to one of your perpetrators, generally they will rise to the occasion and you will see miracles. Now, while that is occurring, your own mind has been heavily invested in the role you have played. It's like a habit. There's going to be a lot of temptation during this phase of transition and miracles. Sometimes you'll just see a miraculous healing where the person all of a sudden just gets rehabilitated and they just start showing up and living a happy life and you go, unbelievable, how did that happen, you know? And then other times it happens a little more slowly. And the reason it slows down, what causes delay? Do we remember that?
Fear.
Fear causes delay. So let's say I'm willing to see this person differently. And then I come home the next day. Maybe this person lives with me, right? And I know their behaviors. I know how they operate. And I know that when they're not home, I know where they are. Or I think I know where they are. So let's just say I'm willing to see this differently. I went to this class last night. I'm just going to give this new lease on life and be willing to see my brother differently. And then the next day I come home and his car is not there. I'm pretty tempted, right, to just go right back to my old habit, right, of thinking I know what he's up to, thinking I know what he's doing. He must be drinking, right? And I'm going to have another evening of this terrible mess. Do you see how easy it would be? Because when we're really invested in acting a certain way and thinking and extending in a certain way, that it's very tempting to go back to it again and again and again. During this time of transition, if you're willing to do this with one of the players on your stage, be vigilant. Be vigilant for the truth. Be vigilant for peace. Be vigilant for God. We've been very vigilant for what's not true. Now it's time to be vigilant for the truth. Even when we don't understand it, even when we don't know what it is, even when we don't know what the perks are. But we already know what we get going the other way, right? We get the very uncomfortable, terrible experience. So we already know that. Might as well try something new, right? So during this time phase, you will be tempted to go back to your old judgments. Be aware of that and don't go there as much as you can. And even ask God for strength. Dear God, I want to see this person differently. If I resume to judging them, if I resume to seeing them in the same old way and validating the role that they have played in my life up until now, will you please remind me to stop doing that? Will you take this from my mind so that I can see the light and the truth and the love within this person? And that they, in truth, can only bless my life. You know, part of our reading, it said, if you think you have received anything else, it is because you have looked within and thought you saw the power to give something else within yourself. And it also says you cannot really give anything but love to anyone or anything, nor can you really receive anything but love from them. Well, that seems like a contradiction because you've experienced not receiving love from them. But remember that when we have a thought, we will experience that thought as if it's real. It's not the truth. And if we can just get to the idea that there's more than what we see, and ultimately realize that we will wake up even from the experience we're having now, and we will look back upon that and see that it is not the truth. And when we recognize the truth, this is a glorious thing, because the truth is a place of consciousness that we can have now where there is no fear, there is no judgment, there is no pain, there is no sorrow, there is no suffering, there is no despair, there is no grief, there is no loss, there is no death. We can have that now. That sounds crazy. Crazy talk, right? Because everybody goes, well, everybody dies. But once you understand that we are not a body, who's dying? It's like leaving almost like an old suit of clothes behind. Wouldn't you want to after it's been useful? So what if you were able to see because your vision is heightening? What if someone that you love is now passing and you were able to actually see them leave their body? Would you be as worried about them? Or if you could see them in the room with you in spirit, or if you could talk to them and you could have responses and dialogue, would you be as worried about them? No. Would you feel that same sense of loss? No. They're still here. And they're still here now. It's just that our awareness has grown dim, and so we're not able to see them and relate to them in the way that feels peaceful for us. In truth, we can only give love, and we can only receive love. If we're receiving anything else, it's because we have agreed to accept something else. We have the power of decision. And that's why that first sentence is so important. The power of decision is your one remaining freedom as a prisoner of this world. So in these relationships, they are divine encounters of the soul. And if we will just see them for what they are, it's not an attack upon our being. These are the places where love has become unknown to us, and it's like a window with curtains over it. It just needs to be opened. And the way that it must be opened is a willingness to let it be opened. But a lot of times we have closed that window, shut down those curtains, and we have ironed a, you know, steel plate over the window, and we say, no, that's just how this person is. There is no way they're going to change. During the transition, now you're willing to see them differently, and you're going to be tempted to go back to your old habits of judgment, the slightest little thing, and there you are, right back into trying to judge them again. The other thing that's going to appear to happen is whatever role they're playing, it's going to appear to ramp up temporarily. If your brother is the, you know, the perpetrator and is causing a lot of pain and misery, all of a sudden it's going to appear to get a little bit worse. So while you're trying to see the greatness and the peace and the happiness and the joy in him and the light and the divinity, he's going to actually become more of a nuisance. And the reason this is happening, he's not fighting you. This is your mind trying to get you to go back to the judgment. Because if you will, you will forget about peace, you will forget about love, you will forget about God. So it will do whatever it can. The lower part of your mind has a function, and that function is to hold the idea of separation in place. So when you're trying to see the truth of him, which really means you're trying to understand him, you're trying to love him, you're trying to join with him and have union, right? And when you're doing that, it means you're trying to remember God. Because God is the creator, this is the real creation, I want to remember the real thing. So when I'm doing that, I'm trying to remember my oneness. And if you remember from the other classes, like the truth behind illusions, or some of the early on classes where we talk about the lower mind's function is to keep you thinking that you're separate from everyone and that you're separated from God and that there's nothing you can do about that. And so by definition, you are not whole, you are not complete, and you are not loved. That part of your mind is going to go to work on you. In the Course in Miracles, it says it will go from suspiciousness to viciousness. It won't truly hurt you, I tell you. It'll look like it will. It's like the boogeyman with a lot of teeth and hair, but he doesn't really bite you. He just looks like he's going to. So your player on the stage will just get a little more irritating, a little more antagonizing. It's not anything that's really a big deal. It just looks like a big deal because you're used to it already. So now he's amped it up a bit. So during the transition, your lower mind is going to go to battle, and it's going to try to keep you preoccupied so that you forget this business of trying to remember his light. If we're aware of this, it's not so hard to get through. You know, if you're going to go out onto a sports field and play another team, isn't it easier to play the other team if you have the playbook of all of their plays? They could be really big. You know, maybe your team's kind of small and squatty. They could be really, really big, but if you know exactly where they're going to run the ball and where they're going to go, and you have the playbook, are you so scared? Maybe a little, but you're sure not as scared as you would be if you had no idea what they were going to do. So when we have this information, this is the playbook. So I'm going to be willing to see this person differently. I'm going to be aware that I'm going to be tempted to judge them, and I'm going to be aware that they're actually going to start amping up in how they respond to me, and I'm just going to be vigilant. So we're writing a new playbook. I'm going to be vigilant. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, I'm going to hold my peace, and I'm going to be willing to see who you are, and that's it. I am going to hold on to vigilance because my safety, my love, my provisioning, my happiness, my health, my joy, my consistency depends on it. Because if I can see love in you, my perpetrator, right, then I can see it in anyone. If you can do it into those dark places, then you can do it any day of any week. That's why these people hold the greatest gold for us. And they're the ones that offer us the grandest opportunities. And then once you see one of these relationships shift, you will just be convinced. And then you will do it in all your relationships. And you'll take them one by one by one, and then all of it will be healed. And that's really what's happened in my life. I just feel like I'm just surrounded by love everywhere and everyone. the persecution has stopped. It doesn't mean everything's perfect, but it's really peaceful and really loving. And my life just keeps getting peopled with more and more loving, amazing, wonderful people that you just feel like family. I mean, more than friends, just family. And even my own family is showing up more like family. So there's so many benefits to doing this. Even if you just play with it as an exercise, you know, what else do you have to do? Because otherwise, you'll just have the same old experience you've always had. Might as well try a new approach. So let's look at another reading here. This is chapter 14, section 7, paragraph 6. And this paragraph is important, I thought, because it talks about secrets. And our last class this weekend, there was a lot about that. You know, families that hold secrets, and maybe you're not allowed to talk about them or share it in public, you know, or not even mention it ever. The Course in Miracles is really clear about secrets. And it's not about judgment. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. You know, a lot of times the lower mind quickly jumps to, oh, did I do that right or wrong? It's not about that. It's just awareness. If we hold something as a secret, it cannot be healed. Because if we trap it within us, even God can't show us our way through it. So whatever that secret is, and it doesn't mean you have to just go run around and tell everybody your secret. Whatever that secret is, go to God and say, I have this secret. We've got these scripts out here, and I've got a script that says I'm not allowed to talk about the secret, and they've got a script that says if I talk about it, they're supposed to yell at me or judge me in some way or punish me. Dear God, we're playing out these roles with each other, and there's this big family secret, and I don't know what to do with that, so I'm just going to bring it to you. Here's my secret, and then talk about that with God first, and just put it out there, and there might be tears. There might be emotions that come up, but bring that secret out in the open and just ask for what to do about it. What is the course of action? Maybe it is to have a conversation. Maybe it is to write a letter. Sometimes if you're writing a letter to someone, which is really great therapy, just to write a letter, like if you're really angry, write that letter exactly the way you would say it if you could. And if you feel like swearing, swear. If you feel like being, you know, frumpy and upset and angry, write the letter the way you feel it from your heart. And usually there's tears, there's emotion, there's frustration. It doesn't mean you're going to give them the letter, but write the letter the way you feel. And then write it again. And watch, it'll soften because all that anger starts to diffuse and come down. Write it again. And you'll just read one to the other and you'll see. It gets softer, gentler, because those very challenging feelings that we've trapped away inside our own little personal vault, they've been in there so long that when you crack that door open, they just come spewing out, you know. So the first version of that letter is likely to be pretty awful. So write the second one. You might even need to write the third one and the fourth one and the fifth one, but it's a wonderful exercise because when you're doing this, you are releasing it from your body. Now, you can pray about whether that letter should be given to the person. It's not as much about them getting the letter or not getting the letter. It's about you releasing this from your vault and putting it out there where it can be healed. Sometimes part of the healing is expressing to the other person, to honor yourself enough to say, you know what? This happened to me and it was wrong. You know, sometimes we just need to be able to say that out loud. And then we can go to God and then we can say, help me to see this person differently. Help me to see that they cannot alter me. But sometimes part of the healing is just to talk about it. And that gets 50% of it done. And then the way that we completely take care of it is we go to God and ask to see that we cannot be altered even by this deep, dark secret. That the light and the truth within us cannot be challenged, it cannot be discounted, it cannot be depreciated by anything of this earth. But I always find peace in taking the small steps. We don't want to just shortcut and just assume that we can just go straight to the truth and skip all the steps in between. Some people can, and if you can, do that. And other people will find that very discouraging because it will make them feel almost weak or frail or powerless, like, well, I can't do that, so that must mean I'm deficient. Take those small steps. Start right where you are and just go in prayer and ask, what do I do with this? How do I see this differently? What are my next steps? Give me the thoughts and the words and the actions. Show me what needs to happen here. I'm willing to see this differently. And three of my favorite words, and I have used them for so many years now, are decide for me. When we go to God and we say, you know, I want healing in this relationship, or I want healing in this situation, and I don't know how to get there, will you please decide for me? I feel like it has two prongs of a positive effect. One is we're calling upon our higher consciousness, which is us, the highest part of that consciousness, the source. We did not create ourselves. We are the effect of the source. So we're calling upon the source to decide for us and to make that decision. And then what we're doing is we're also saying, decide for me, where if I decide, I might have decided against me, right? Sometimes we do that. We decide against ourselves, and we don't mean to, but we do it. Like every time we put judgment on another person, we don't even realize we're deciding against ourselves because they're us. There's only one of us here. Decide for me means, God, make that decision for me. And by the way, thank you for deciding for me in place of where I might have decided against myself. Isn't that nice? It's kind of a package deal. It goes all the way around. And then we listen and we hold our own vigilance in listening. And what we do is we follow now what feels peaceful and compelling. If you have those two elements, you know you are listening to your higher consciousness, peaceful and compelling. Now, a lot of times we feel compelled, but we're feeling anxious and compelled, fearful and compelled. Well, I better call him right away because he might have left his office. That's not exactly peaceful and compelling. But if you all of a sudden you're washing some dishes and you get the thought, it just drifts down in your mind and it says, you need to make that phone call right now. And you're like, boy, I sure do. Well, maybe I'll finish these dishes. And then you hear that thought again and it says, nope, you need to call right now. That's peaceful and compelling. It's just a peaceful thought and it just won't go away. And if you're not sure, ask. God, is this from you? I need a little signal. I need a little light on it. And the way that you'll know is there won't be any fear, even in a fearful situation. When you're getting a peaceful, compelling thought, it'll be kind of a warm feeling, just a calm, quiet, still thought. Even in the midst of chaos, we can have those moments, right? We have incredible moments. So we could be in the middle of all this madness, and if you get a thought from God, it'll just be like this beautiful piece of fruit that just fell down in your lap. All of a sudden, you'll feel peaceful and compelled, and that's when it's time to take action. So you think, well, what do I do in the meantime? You know? So in the meantime, quiet your mind, practice love, practice your vigilance, don't go back to those old habits. So when you drive up into your driveway and your brother's car is not there and you're starting to think, oh gosh, he's down at the bar or something, then you stop and you sit in your car and you go, God, I'm tempted to go back to my old judgment. I'm tempted to have fear about this, but I am willing to see my brother differently. And right now I have this fear that he's somewhere that is not it, that is destructive to himself, and I'm willing to just give you that thought. I don't need to know what to think. My part is to not decide against him. You know what? He might be at the bar. But I tell you what, when you respond this way, it pulls him right up and off of that bar stool. And if he's willing, he will still come home and meet you there, right? Those are the kinds of things that start happening. When you choose truth, when you choose peace as your response, you will invite it, you will invoke it, and you will experience it. And if someone else is even slightly willing to join you there, they will. Everyone is a beautiful, loving, pure, innocent soul. It is who we are. We are coated with it. We cannot not be that. Even as awful as we can be, even as many mistakes as we can make, even as many times as we have failed and blown it, we cannot alter the truth within us. we begin to think we can, so much so that we think that God himself has decided against us. And then we begin to experience a life that is all about misery and pain and despair because we have believed now that our own source has decided against us. Well, even for a plant, if its root system decided against it, wouldn't that plant wither and die? Right? So if we believe our source is against us, which it is not, then we will have the experience as if it is real of our own life almost dissolving and being destroyed in front of us. This is so much easier than it sounds. And yet it's hard too. The challenge will be old habits die hard. But as long as you know that's the challenge, right? So if you know that you're willing to see this person differently, but you're going to be tempted to judge, and so tomorrow morning when you go into that judgment, you'll go, oop, check, check, I'm doing it, I need to stop that. And that doesn't mean that you're sabotaging it. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It means that every time you do it, you are delaying that peaceful outcome. And why would we want to do that? We can. If I want to hurt myself right now, I can. God won't stop me. You know why? Because God knows that I am whole and complete, and that even if I try to hurt myself, I still can't alter the truth of who I am. So nothing rushes in to stop me because all I'm doing is projecting pain on myself. It's very self-destructive, and yet in truth, I haven't destroyed anything. I've only caused myself a whole lot of grief. So once we know this and we have that game plan, we can choose to see others differently. We can be vigilant for the peace. We can be vigilant for the listening. And every time they act up and maybe go into a vicious state of how they appear to us, we can say, God, I need some strength. I need your strength. I need your wisdom. I need your love, your compassion, your understanding, because I'm having a tough time with this. It's okay. You don't have to, you know, in the Course it says, don't purify your mind before you go to God. God's the purifier. Go there and just empty out your pockets. And some of it has rocks and some of it has gold nuggets, and put it out on the table and keep the gold and let the rest go. But we don't have to try to outthink ourselves. We don't have to figure it all out before we go back to the source. The Holy Spirit asks of you but this: bring to him every secret you have locked away from him. Open every door to him and bid him enter the darkness and lighten it away. At your request, he enters gladly. He brings the light to darkness if you make the darkness open to him. But what you hide, he cannot look upon. He sees for you, and unless you look with him, he cannot see. The vision of Christ is not for him alone, but for him with you. Bring, therefore, all your dark and secret thoughts to him, and look upon them with him. He holds the light, and you the darkness. They cannot coexist when both of you together look on them. His judgment must prevail. His judgment prevails because when you bring darkness to the light prevails. So it's not like he's better or more or greater. He said to us that we will do even greater things than he. We are made of the same stuff. It's just that he hasn't taken on the fearful thoughts the way we have, so we have all these dark experiences because we've taken on the fear. But when we bring that fear into the light, it is dispelled. Page 241, chapter 13, section 2, paragraph 9 says, "Little child, this is not so. Your guilty secret is nothing, and if you will but bring it to the light will dispel it. And then no dark cloud will remain between you and the remembrance of your Father, for you will remember his guiltless Son, who did not die because he is immortal. And you will see that you were redeemed with him and have never been separated from him. In this understanding lies your remembering. It is the recognition of love without fear." There's another reading, just some different paragraphs I thought went well together. This is chapter 13. Section 10, paragraph 11, page 265. "You cannot enter into real relationships with any of God's sons, which of course includes daughters, it's all one here, unless you love them all and equally. Hear that again. You cannot enter into real relationships with any of God's sons unless you love them all and equally. Love is not special. If you single out part of the sonship for your love, you are imposing guilt on all your relationships and making them unreal. You can love only as God loves. Seek not to love unlike Him, for there is no love apart from His. Until you recognize that this is true, you will have no idea what love is like. No one who condemns a brother can see himself as guiltless and in the peace of God. If he is guiltless and in peace and sees it not, he is delusional and has not looked upon himself. To him I say, behold the Son of God, and look upon his purity and be still. In quiet, look upon his holiness and offer thanks unto his Father that no guilt has ever touched him. So when we look at our perpetrators and our villains and our persecutors, try to imagine that no guilt has ever touched him. It's a lot to imagine, but the perks and the benefits of even playing with these concepts will just astound you. This is where miracles happen. And I have one more. And it's page 284, paragraph 11. And this one is chapter 14, section 5. Each one you see, you place within the holy circle of atonement or leave outside, judging him fit for crucifixion or for redemption. If you bring him into the circle of purity, you will rest there with him. If you leave him without, you join him there. Judge not, except in quietness, which is not of you. Refuse to accept anyone as without the blessing of atonement, and bring him into it by blessing him. Holiness must be shared, for therein lies everything that makes it holy. Come gladly to the holy circle, and look out in peace on all who think they are outside. Cast no one out, for here is what he seeks along with you. Come, let us join him in the holy place of peace, which is for all of us, united as one with the cause of peace.